No, I'm not going over. Okay, I'm going to put the microphone on so you guys can hear these questions, okay? Just because you're not doing anything anyway. So what do you do when two dogs fight? I usually start putting pressure on whatever injury is hemorrhaging at the time. What do you mean, what do? Oh, okay. So your question is, when two dogs fight, do you immediately throw somebody on the ground and say, I'm not going to tolerate that? Is that what you're saying?
I'm asking, what do you recommend?
Oh, I wouldn't recommend that.
Right.
Because you've already got high anxiety, high arousal, and it may calm them down, but it's not going to associate it with the behavior. If two dogs fight, I separate them,
okay,
and I just separate them.
And then one's in the house, one's outside.
Absolutely. Let everybody calm down, and then you start trying to figure out why are the dogs fighting and figure it out. But after the fact, all you're going to do is make it worse, because more than likely they're fighting because somebody has anxiety, and then if you jump in, you're going to make it worse, and you're going to get injured, okay? That's when most of our clients get injured, is in the middle of dog fights. No, I don't let them fight it out. No, I don't. It depends. If it's, okay, for instance, the other day when my son's dog, hey, by the way, that's Hero on the front of these. And I'm standing, and why he's acting like this is because I'm standing up steps calling him. And he can't go, so he's going, I gotta go. So he's really not ferocious. But anyway, they got in a fight over a piece of bread the other day. Okay, he is really the boss dog, although he's just such a mild giant, it's hard to believe. But the Jack Russell has to listen to him. And they both went after a piece of bread that was on the floor. And Hero said, get out of my face, you little brat. And he picked up that Jack Russell and he threw him. Okay, what does a Jack Russell do after that?
Come back.
I didn't interrupt it. I sat there and I observed it because I was like, well, this is really cool. I wonder what's going to happen. Now, I would have jumped in if I would have thought that Hero would hurt. It was loud. It was obnoxious. And yeah, my Jack Russell was limping afterwards. And I was like, good for you, buddy, you dummy. You know, don't leave the 90-pound golden retriever alone. But if it's something different than that, where you can tell by the loudness and it keeps going, you got to stop it. Okay. And separate them. Let everybody calm down. And I found the best way to break up a dog fight is a bar stool. I'm serious. I've tried golf clubs. It doesn't work really. It works okay, but a bar stool, you feel like a lion tamer? Honestly. So if you don't have, I told clients the other day to go buy one. But other than that, little dogs that fight, harnesses. If they both have body harnesses, you can pick them up like this. I've done that in an exam room and went, wow, that was interesting. So anyway, okay.
And how do you feel about crate training?
I think crate training is a necessity in most cases, not all cases, but most cases. You cannot use crate training for most separation anxiety.
Right, okay.
Okay. Woo-hoo. Well, I don't think we even have to start yet, do we? Is it time? Oh, quick question. First of all, there's no quick questions in behavior, but go ahead. Yes. Oh, very good question. Can you apply everything that we've been talking about, like jumping on counters, to cats? Yes, you can. But I am actually, I've got a cat. I've got not a very smart cat. He's a research cat. He was bred in a research facility. He was bred to be large, docile, and not to be able to learn from bad experience, right? Because he's you know, we're putting catheters in. Well, anyway, he was in a Prozac study, and I fell in love with him. And he's just not a smart cat. He's great. I love him. He's not smart. But he's got a problem with, he gets on the counters. And he not only gets on the counters, but he tries to eat what you're eating. You know, I mean, he is so obnoxious. He'll try to eat meat in a frying pan while it's frying. He's just not smart. And, you know, in that case, I'd let it go because hopefully there's going to be an environmental punishment. In his case, I'm actually going to try a device called the Treat and Train, which is a remote reward system, which don't tell anybody, but Premier Pet Products is picking it up, and we'll have it in the fall, hopefully better and cheaper. I'm going to try my cat on that, teaching him to go to an alternate place. With most cats, it would work, but he's just so slow. I don't know if it will. But, yeah, these techniques will work.
Welcome back. Be sure that you shuffle the off ones by the mode. And for your evaluation, this session is 19513. So please again, fill this out. And then welcome back on this show. And this is part two, three, four, five.
Part two. Yeah, one more. almost there to part two. Yeah. Okay, so we're almost there. I need to talk about this technique, which is flooding. This is very important for you to know about this. We're in the last section. Flooding means taking a continuous exposure to a fear-provoking stimulus for which it can't escape. Very good situation is tomorrow I'm going to be flooded, and I'm not looking forward to this. I'm terrified of heights. I have vertigo. I see, I'm getting upset. Can you hear it in my voice? I'm getting upset thinking about it. And I went skiing for the first time about 3 weeks ago up in Michigan. And the ski lift, you know, I was doing great. I thought this was a blast. And then all of a sudden I went, oh, my God, I have to do a ski lift. I can't do this. But I really wanted to ski. So the motivation there was there. I got on the ski lift, and I froze. I went into a complete panic attack. Oh, my gosh, it was awful. But I kept doing it over and over. And once you're on a ski lift, they don't come and get you off, okay, when you're freaking out. So I kept doing it, and I did it, and I survived. Well, tomorrow I'm going to Breckenridge. I think the ski lifts are bigger there, and I'm really nervous about it. But that's flooding. That's putting me in a situation that I cannot get out of. Flooding can work for minor anxieties. I wouldn't call mine minor. Hence, I'm really thinking I need some anti-anxiety drugs tomorrow. But it can work properly for minor anxiety. It's inhumane unless for very mild fear reactions. So, for instance, a puppy who's in your arms, and he's not even really afraid, but he just wants down, hold him. That's flooding because he wants down and you're not letting go. When he relaxes, put him down. Okay, that's a very mild reaction. It will worsen the behavior dramatically if not applied correctly. So basically, it's like taking, if you were afraid of, and this is absolutely the truth, if you were afraid of spiders, I would put you in a room covered with spiders. Probably I would have to blindfold you. I would take you into the room. I would set you down. I would sneak out, turn on the lights, take off your blindfold, and there's spiders everywhere. Honest to God, okay? What are you going to do? You can't get out, right? You would either mentally shut down, you would just immediately freeze and tune out, go insane, or you would get used to it. And the thing is, you can't let the person out until they get calm. Because if you let them out while they're still terrified, you'll actually reward their behavior. You see? Through avoidance conditioning. So you have to do it properly. It can cause physical and psychological damage, which I'm really worried about tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to do. It should rarely be used. Very, very rarely. Okay, so here is a case where I actually did use it. This is Abby. Okay, this is some of our vet techs. We're in a lab. Hey, I kept saying, hold on to the head. Listen. That's it. Okay, she shouldn't be rewarding there, okay? Okay, take the... This technician is not doing this properly. She's a student. First of all, the one technician isn't restraining properly.
That's good. Very smart puppy.
Hold on. Okay, don't let go. Wait.
You need an extra hand.
He still takes treats. Give it to him now. Take it away. Increase your restraint a little bit. That's desensitization. And see if he'll continue treatment. Now, what we found out about this case was this puppy only did this at the veterinary hospital. He did not do it for the owners. It was not a problem for the owners to restrain them. So I worked with him. Now, what was unusual about this dog
was
that when I would hold her,
she didn't like that. She didn't like touching the back of her head. She didn't like
And then if I clicked, she would stop screaming and take the treat.
I could feel
her
relaxing.
And then start screaming again.
So, you know, and I
went, now, wait a minute. So, let me go, let me go. Click. Let me go, let me go. Click. That told me that she wasn't that afraid. She really was faking it.
We're really pushing her here. Mm-hmm.
She really was faking it. So I held on and waited for her to calm down. And this is what we ended up with. Is this unbelievable?
Girl.
She's amazing. And actually, I want a bottle of wine on this because I told our resident, I can fix this. I can cure this. And so we had a bet on whether I could do it. And Dr. Lucier had to actually come in and say, pay her the bottle of wine. She won. Okay. This is a very strange, you're never going to see this again. This was from many years ago. This is a very interesting situation, and this is actually modified flooding. This is a dog who's aggressive to people, very aggressive to people. This is at our dogs course, and we don't have any students involved. Okay, these are all we have the people observing in the distance, a far distance, are the ones that are actually attending the course. And we were trying an experiment with this dog. So we have this dog with a basket muzzle on, and we had it hooked. Dr. Lucia and I came up. We must have been delirious when we came up with this. We had it hooked up so that there was a catheter coming here, and hooked to it was chicken broth. Because the dog had a basket muzzle on, and we wanted to be able to reward it constantly. I mean, we used cheese and all kinds of things, but we wanted to try something different. It didn't work very well. But what we did here was we've got the owner doing fast-paced healing. So there's response substitution going on, and she's healing around these people. And then every so often, you'll see me raise my hand, and those people will take a step in. Okay? So pretty soon, the dog's being crowded, but it's modified. Because we're not throwing him into that situation full steam and not letting him out. We're doing it in a very gradual process. Everybody moves in. The owner does a great job. She's tired. Look at this. See, look at her. She's got a little syringe there. And the dog's licking it. There you go. It really didn't work very well, but it's still kind of funny to look at. He's still trying to, he's trying to go back after it. I didn't notice that. It's very controlled, and then we'll raise our arm, and we'll go back in. And we do use this in very few cases. Very, very few cases we'll do this. And notice that the volunteers are holding their arms very close to their sides. You're not moving. You don't want to add a stimulus at all. And it's really desensitization at the same time and response substitution. So it's really modified. And don't go out and try that. But I thought it would be interesting because Dr. Lucia didn't even know I had that on video. Now here is one, a very wonderful flooding. I'm not going to say it's... Okay, this dog's got an issue with the toaster. Which to me, this would be a problem that a veterinary technician should treat. Okay, if it's just the toaster... That's not really a behavior problem. That's a training issue. Or...
Well, after it pops,
I can't make it go up any higher.
We're in attack mode.
You guys hear it at all? I don't know how to turn it up. Turned it up
right
here.
We have to stop the running away behavior. Because every time he runs,
I got it.
Right.
We can put a leash on him, so we have access on him in case if he runs away. We bring him back. And we let him deal with the toaster right here.
That would be
you
flooding.
You need to use a leash because
he's
running away from you.
Now, what I would recommend is doing some response substitution
okay.
around
they
the toaster.
They have no option.
Moving it slowly.
You're telling them to be in a submissive state of mind. That's it. No flight, no fight, no avoidance. Can I do the toaster myself? You mind?
No.
Okay.
This is flooding. That dog is doing that because he's afraid. Notice him trying to hide. Okay? Licking his lips. He can't leave. He's lucky he doesn't get bitten here. This dog is obviously not aggressive. Okay, tries to leave, can't leave, make it go away. That little scary monster down there. Ah, make it go away. Now, I'll tell you what I would do instead. First of all, I would do desensitization. But that sound of the toaster, what could you do instead?
You have to come to him.
Toaster,
and
treat.
And force him
toaster,
to deal
treat.
With
toaster,
it. Because we're not going
right?
to hurt him. We're just going to
that
teach him
is
a
flooding.
Lesson there. This is not...
Okay, now we're going to move on to getting it right. Now you know why we do these things. Common behavior modification techniques. One of them that we use very frequently is avoid casual interactions. The dog is constantly being rewarded, as we talked about earlier, and it's often rewarded for unwanted behaviors. The technique is to change the owner's behavior for the dog. Okay? It's not, we're changing how the owner interacts to make the dog feel better. Owner seems very inconsistent and unpredictable, as we saw in some earlier videos. The owners are scary to the dog. And it creates a calming effect for the dog because the environment is so much more stable. It decreases hyperexcitability. And it is not command response reward. It's not nothing in life for free. Nothing in life for free comes from the dominance theory. It comes from your dog doesn't get anything unless he earns it because you are the leader of your pack. Okay? Well, our concept is the dog doesn't get anything unless you ask him to do something, then you reward him. But there's a whole difference. The nothing in life for free is about teaching him that you control all resources. Our view on command, response, reward is it's for the owner. Your dog is terrified because you are so inconsistent. So let's make your behavior more consistent. I don't want you to just talk to him throughout the day. I don't want him to do what we all do all day. Hi, buddy. I have to go to work today. You know, what are you going to do all day? Tell me you guys do that. Come on. I caught myself having a conversation with my son's dog walking down the hall at the vet school. Do you want to go down to the vet tech office and visit our friends? You know, it's like, okay, let's go. It's like he actually responded to me. He doesn't have a problem. Therefore, I can do that. Command, response, reward to be used anytime the owner wants or needs to interact with the dog. Therefore, they're avoiding casual interaction. And now when they interact, it's very consistent and predictable. The owner becomes more consistent with all interactions. And this is the other bonus, is that if they're interacting with the dog this way, they're also avoiding aggressive situations. Because every time that dog has an aggressive situation, we're allowing him to learn the wrong thing. We're taking 10 steps backwards. So we have to stop the aggressive situations. I told you about pugs and dressing them up. They do it all the time. Poor dogs. Avoid triggers. This is a management tool. It means it keeps the animal from continuing to learn the wrong coping skill and gains more confidence in performing the appropriate behavior. How I think about this is some people don't get this little scenario. But let's say you've been going down a path, you know, and it's this field, and you've beaten down the grass. Well, now someone says you can't go down that path anymore. You need to go down this path. We want the way we were doing it before to go away. So we have to keep doing it the other way until this grass grows up and you don't even remember ever going that way. That's what we're doing with these dogs. They've been doing it a certain way over and over, and we have to stop them from doing it so they forget that they had ever done it that way. That's not an option. I have a new way of doing it now. So that's what avoiding triggers does for you. Ignoring, extinction. This is another common management tool that we use. Ignore unwanted conditioned behaviors. Ignore attention-getting behaviors. And you cannot ignore self-reinforcing behaviors. And there's some attention-getting behaviors that you can't ignore. I've had some dogs who will jump on their owners and really hurt them. You can't ignore that. So at that point, you have to do response substitution. The problem is that you get really smart dogs who learn. Let me give you a good example here. I learn that if I run over to her and jump on her 90-year-old grandmother, then they'll tell me to sit. So jump, sit. That's called chaining. Okay, you can prevent that from occurring by breaking them apart a little bit, meaning the dog. Okay, let me see. I have another good one. A dog jumps up at you while you're trying to read the paper, and you tell him to sit. Well, he continues jumping up at you and then sitting. What you have to do instead is ignore him jumping up at you. He kind of pauses to go, well, why isn't this working? Then you tell him to sit. So you break it apart a little bit. You break the chain apart, and hopefully they won't chain it. Some dogs are easily rewarded just by looking at them. They're easily rewarded. Okay, now here's a guy that is really a nightmare. This is Taz. First of all, they need to change his name to Taz, Tasmanian Devil. She is trying to ignore this dog, and she's actually doing a really good job. She is not looking at him. She is not acknowledging him. And he does this all day. His hackles are eating up a little bit right there, and there's nothing going on. You see how he's even getting a little aggressive? Did you see that? He is so proud, he doesn't know what he's doing. Nothing is happening. Now, there's the knowledge that we get a horrible thing going on. He reaches up and actually grabs her. He knows she's still standing there. And there he is again. Look at his hackles. You guys see that? Nothing's happening and this dog is that aroused. Now this is a dog where extinction was really difficult because he was really reaching up and grabbing her and getting more extreme. So we had to put a head collar on him and every time he started this make him sit. But one of the first things we had to do was put the dog on the couch. He's like, oh my God, you wear me out. He's like, just shut up. See, and now she gets back up. So she's getting rewarded somehow. But we also wondered about a chemical imbalance in him. We had to wonder about a chemical imbalance in him, whether or not she was taking him for walks. We do see hyperkinesis in some dogs. It's very, very rare. And how you find out if a dog has hyperkinesis? Anybody have any ideas? You give him an amphetamine. So a dog like this, you would give an amphetamine. Can you imagine? So we make sure it's at a veterinary hospital. If you give them, we've had two cases of this in the 8 years I've been there. We gave the dog that acted like that an amphetamine, and guess what he did? He went to sleep. That tells us that we're dealing with an attention deficit type chemical imbalance. It's very, very rare. And that is really the only way that you can diagnose it. They've had other ways with heart rates, and Dr. Lucier says they just don't work. But we don't see very much of it. And he was not a hyperkinetic dog, although he sure looked like it, but he wasn't. Okay, so let's talk about counter conditioning. To create a conditioned stimulus, the order must be... So now we're talking about counter conditioning and how to do it correctly. The order must be correct. Occur every time the stimulus is presented, and it needs to be novel. Okay, that means, for instance, I do this with gentle leaders a lot. I get the gentle leader out, I give them a treat. Get the gentle leader out, give them a treat. They're like... I get the gentle leader out, they come running over, I give them a treat. I put the gentle leader away and I ignore them. 2 minutes later, get the gentle leader out, they come running across the room because there's that cool thing, and I give them a treat. So you want to make sure that they can tell what's causing the reward to come. Really good stuff. Really good stuff is something very, very special that the dog adores, whether it's food or attention or... I was talking earlier about a little fur mouse. They have little rabbit. Premier has little rabbit fur mice, which dogs will destroy if they get a hold of. But a lot of times I'll click the clicker, and then the fur mouse comes running out, and then the fur mouse disappears. And then the dog goes, oh, I want my friend the fur mouse to come back out. Here, I'll sit. Oh, look, the fur mouse came back out, which is really good. Now, I did that with a Jack Russell and got bitten, okay, accidentally. He went after the fur mouse and missed. The dog does not receive the really good stuff any other time. So, for instance, if our problem is fear of large dogs, this little guy sees a large dog in the distance, and it's far enough away that he doesn't react. He sees it. He might go, whoa, did you see that? See that big thing way over there? Oh, there it is. So he notices it, and then the good stuff comes out. Here, buddy. What a good boy. Here's some treats. Good boy. Then the scary thing disappears, and you ignore the dog. Then... the dog comes back into view, and the treats come back out again. Okay? That's counter conditioning. You cannot increase a fear reaction with food. If you know, for instance, let's take a dog in the run. Okay, not the people that we're talking about. You guys were talking about your dog on the run, that you're afraid of her dog because he acts so crazy. Okay, not that dog. Okay? That dog's a little scary. Not that dog. But if you're talking about your normal, oh, I remember these. You come in the morning, the dog would charge the run going, woo, right? You guys know what I'm talking about? Throw food at him. Throw a handful full of food at him every time you walk by. You are not going to reward that, woo. You're going to, what's going to happen? You just do that for a day. Walk past. Every time he comes running in the front of the door, cage, throw treats and walk past. Do that over and over. And he'll start running in the front and going, woo, and you'll throw treats. Then you'll see him run to the front and he'll go, woo, tail wagging, sit. Then throw the treat. And it will go away. It will absolutely go away. I like to kind of bonk those guys with the treats. Seriously. I like to throw kibble so they kind of get pelleted. Don't poke my eye out with a treat. But you cannot reward fear with food. That is so important because people are always saying that. You can reward fear. You can increase fear with touch. So little dog's going, woo, this is scary. And the owner picks him up and goes, come here, baby. That dog's not going to hurt you. Yep, you can reward that. Okay, so here's a practical application. Dog doesn't like children. We've got this child riding his big wheel. And you say, what a good dog. What a good boy. Here's some treats. Oh, you're so good. What a good boy. Child disappears. I don't have a dog anymore. Child appears, and you do it again. Okay? And eventually you get this. So the little hors d'oeuvre, you know how hard it was to find a Yorkie and a Great Dane standing next to each other. Okay, so here's a good example of counter conditioning. This is changing the emotional response.
Okay, I stopped it.
Okay, so in this case, I'm using a hairdryer, and I can't really...
Watch what's going to happen to these guys.
I can't control the sound, so I turn on the hairdryer, and the people are trying to give their puppies treats.
Okay,
now, none of the puppies are freaking out. If they were freaking out,
okay,
I would pass
that's
the treats
stimulus.
But none of these puppies
and
are freaking out.
Quickly. Now, you still got to deal with things like the air blowing out, and I'm not going to do that right now tonight. But just to get them used to something like this, if they're not horribly frightened,
okay.
You can just...
Look at that. Did you see what that little puppy did? Dryer, where's my food? Okay? That, we've changed the emotional response. We've made a classical association. Okay, and then I'm not going to go over clicker training because I went over it a little bit in the last place. Somebody had a question. What happens if the dog's afraid of the clicker? It happens. And in that case, you can either make the clicker softer by putting layers of tape over the dimple, and then I take off a layer at a time, muffling it, and then a lot of dogs, you can do that fairly quickly. But I've had some dogs, one click, and they're out of there. And if that's the case, I don't use the clicker. I use something else. I use a word, or I'll use a baby clicker, which is just a toy clicker. You can get it at the dollar store, and it's really soft. I even had a dog who reacted to that, though. She generalized her fear of the clicker to that. And in that case, I just used a word. She did great with good dog, so I used that. Now, just keep in mind, a word's not going to be nearly as accurate. But in her case, there was no point in switching it. She did really well with it. So let's talk about response substitution now. How do I get my dog... This is what I used to do with clients in obedience classes. Don't tell me. Tell me, how do I get my dog to stop jumping on people and instead sit in front of them? So I had the clients work this out for themselves. You teach sit in front of people. So how do I get him to stop pulling his foot away? I teach him to shake. How do I get him to stop moving while I brush her? You teach stand stay. So this is kind of a... You teach them an alternate response. Choose a behavior that won't allow the inappropriate behavior to occur. Begin training in a quiet environment with no distractions. You don't teach this the second someone is at the front door and you need the dog to sit quietly, okay? You set it up in a classroom setting. In your home, you set it up gradually. Then you put the behavior on cue, and then you begin adding more distractions. Okay, so you teach it, then you begin adding more distractions. And capitalize on a lack of generalization. Now, what do I mean by this? Is let's say you've got a dog who charges the front door, and he's been doing it that way. But he hasn't generalized it to the back door. So let's go train him at the back door first. Or let's say you've got a dog who darts out the front door. Let's teach him to wait at the garage door. Then we'll generalize it to the front door. You see? We're using generalization in our favor because the dogs don't generalize training behaviors very well. So let's use the door where he hasn't had a bad experience first. Okay, a head collar is often necessary. It's also often a necessity to have a head collar on a dog. Because if they're, okay, like the earlier we saw the little pit bull who was just going crazy, don't bother talking to her. If you had a head collar on her, you could turn her away from the stimulus and then help her to calm down. Do not allow the dog to continue to look and focus at the stimuli. This is what people like to do. Here, I'm doing response substitution. Sit. So now the dog's sitting, staring at whatever it is, okay? That's not response substitution. Get him turned away. And they give signals, and you got to be on top of it. Response substitution means you really got to be a step ahead of them. Be confident. Okay, these are some things that the National Geographic show that I've used, he does some things I really like. So, for instance, when you have a fearful dog, be confident. This dog cannot make decisions. It's afraid. It's making decisions we don't like. So you need to be... Stop that. So you need to be confident. You need to be confident and say, we're doing it this way. And that dog will be relieved. You see what I'm saying? But if the owner's all fidgety and the dog's all fidgety and the owner's not making a decision, the dog's going to make the wrong decision. So I like it when he says that. Be preemptive. Your goal is to do it before the dog reacts. Remember Boo? How can you all forget Boo? Okay, I will never forget Boo. The problem with Boo, and this is one of the things that may have actually been the clincher, this may be the one where Boo doesn't stay on this planet, was I told the owner, who's a veterinarian, I said, one of the problems is we need you to do response substitution. You need to react before Boo does. But guess what? Boo can be laying there and stand up and just go at somebody. There is no warning. And I'm not kidding you, because people tell me that, and I go, yeah, yeah, you know. And I see conflict behaviors, and they don't see it. Boo did not give any warning. He would just explode. So how are you going to do response substitution with a dog like that? It's always going to be after the fact. Which is, when I said that, she went, I see your point. How are we ever going to preempt this? I don't know. Let's see what happens on drugs. That's what I said. Be quick, okay? You can't go, this is the other thing that owner's doing correctly. Okay, let's go this way. All right. Yeah, I see that dog over there. Let's go. No, you should be breathing hard. You're moving to keep them busy. Because your job is to keep them busy. Don't allow them to do the inappropriate response. They still know it's there. They see it. But you're teaching them an alternate thing to do, and they're getting rewarded for it. Generalization. Dogs don't generalize, as we said before, non-emotionally laden behavior well, but they do generalize high emotion situations. Use the lack of generalization when possible. And I talked about this already. Oh, there's Race, my boxer, that died. So Race had an issue at the front door. So you see this up here? This are doggy treats hanging up here. So whenever anyone, and these are windows where my neighbor kids like to come over and stick their face right about there with the dog going, roar, and the kid's face is right there. Okay, I just could never figure it out. So whenever anyone came over, I had treats really handy to do response substitution. And you could put them in the bathroom, but then people, you know, guests come over and think they're human treats. And so I had them hanging up the door. Okay, now here are some instructions at the door for response substitution. What time does this one get over?
I was just trying to get him to do it.
Okay.
He's our general leader to get him to do it. But eventually, I won't even have to do that.
I'm doing desensitization and response substitution at the door.
Now I'm also adding in there, opening the door.
Ooh,
the door there. Okay. Jackson, sit.
He gets up.
That means I went too fast. Jackson, sit.
I guess I don't need to talk during this.
Sit. He's got such a pretty face. His face is so much more relaxed than it was before. Jackson, sit.
Uh-oh. No, really, this works.
I knew he was in there. I knew once we get rid of some of that anxiety, he was in there. Jackson, sit.
I'm prompting it with the gentle leader.
Jackson, sit. Now, I really backed up there.
See, so he kept getting up every time I put my hand on it. So this time I could just put my hand on it for a second and then click. My job is to do it before he gets up. So I had to increase it to the level where he should succeed.
Because he failed, like, three or four. And I assume that means I'm asking too much. I need to change what I'm asking for and make it easier for him so he succeeds.
This little guy was so aggressive. You guys aren't going to see him at his desk.
Good boy. You get a click and a treat just because you did that.
Almost biting my leg. He made, this was his follow-up appointment.
He's also taking the treat a lot harder. You see how he's kind of doing the grabbing thing? I think I'm putting a lot of pressure on it right now. Jackson, sit. Sit.
That's negative reinforcement. You see that? I hold his head up until he sat, then release it. That's negative reinforcement. I'm not saying it's always bad.
That's what you're
gonna do. You also already knew how to sit.
And then you're gonna work up to having somebody there but at a distance. You might have someone that you're
what I'm talking to you there is then you work up to having somebody not quietly, and you can do it fairly quickly. Okay, but that's what I do during consults. Dr. Lusher's gone out of the room, and now I'm setting it up for the client, and I have them do it. This is actually Hero, my son's service dog. This is the treat and train, which Premier will be picking up. And so I have a remote control in my hand, and I can actually reward Hero. I'm clear across the room. He doesn't even know I'm there, and I can reward Hero for staying in a down stay. Very handy. Here's response substitution at the dishwasher. And in this case, this is my daughter, Skylar. Oh, there's Race. He's still alive there.
No, bad dog.
Okay, I told her to do that. Okay, that's not normally what she does. I said, go ahead and do what you'd like to do if I wasn't watching, Skylar. Okay? And so these dogs are trying to lick out the dishwasher. Because dogs like that. So instead, now this is funny. This is what you do for response substitution. Notice that the boxer is gone, okay? He said, I'm taking a nap. It's not worth it. But now he's really tough in here.
Go ahead.
Then he gets to lick the dishes for about 10 seconds. You see? So he wanted to lick the dishes. normal dog behavior, but it bugs the heck out of us. So do a down stay. Touch the dishes. Okay, there you go. He got what he wanted. We got what we wanted, and we came together to do it. Okay, sometimes that's what I'm talking about, being fair. Sometimes we're not fair to our dogs. Okay, this is response. This is Dr. Lusher's dog, and this is response substitution. His dog is really pretty dog aggressive. He improves, but then he doesn't get around strange dogs for a while. And his main problem is on leash. Off leash, he doesn't really have a problem. So this is the response substitution that we normally do. We've got the target dog sitting over here, and the target dog is not doing anything but sitting here getting treats. We're doing response substitution, working quickly around, working closer and closer. There's our target dog. So Dr. Lusher is doing about turns, making fast-paced healing. He could be using a clicker here. I think he does for some of it, and some of it he doesn't. Ah, right there. Did you see Barnes go, woo? So we have to increase the distance. Okay, so we have to go further away again and start it there. If you have a dog who reacts to another dog a block away, you got a problem. You've got a serious problem. In that case, you're going to have to go to drug therapy. You can't get far enough away from the stimulus. You're going to have to stick to counter conditioning for a while, possibly add medication to decrease the anxiety level, and then work up to it. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you get an extreme case that you're just going to have to stick with counter conditioning for a while. Yes? If they notice it and don't react, okay? So especially, you're going to see this here in a little bit, where Barnes might actually look at the other dog and he could click, okay? But he didn't react. You wouldn't click the dog if he reacted, okay? You would increase your distance quickly away. So Dr. Lusher is continuing to work closer and closer. And he's got his hands full because this dog is big. You know, Dr. Lusher laughs at me because I am not fond of St. Bernards. Does anybody know why? Cujo, that darn movie messed me up. Oh my gosh, that movie. Read the book? No, thank you. No, that movie really messed me up. Okay, systematic desensitization. To desensitize properly, to use desensitization, you have to be able to identify what they're afraid of. If they're afraid of everything, or if you don't know what they're afraid of, you can't use desensitization. You have to be able to reproduce what they're afraid of. So if they're afraid of thunder, maybe if they react to a CD, but they usually don't. So you have to be able to reproduce it. You have to be able to find a non-stressful starting point. So, for instance, if you were afraid of spiders, I would have to have you here, and where can you tolerate having a spider? Who's afraid of spiders? Anybody? Okay, there we go. Okay. Okay, this is for all the spider freaks. Okay? So, would you be comfortable with me holding a tarantula here? Yes or no? Somebody say something. No. Would you be comfortable with me holding a spider with you out in the hallway? But you know I'm holding a spider. Yeah, that's where we'd start. Okay. Control the intensity of the stimulus. Okay, if I have a spider and it suddenly starts darting towards you and I can't control the spider, not going to work. You cannot use desensitization if you can't control the intensity. So if you have a dog, for instance, let's say a garbage truck goes by every day at the same time. You can't control that garbage truck. You can't tell the garbage truck guy to go slower because it frightens your dog and you're trying to desensitize him. Right? You can't control the intensity. So in that case, you'd have to go to classical conditioning. Garbage truck, food. Garbage truck, peanut butter on the roof of their mouth. Okay? Because they can't spit it out as easily. So noise, food. Noise, food. Noise, food. That's the only way you could do it. Did that answer your question? Did you have a question? Fireworks, 4th of July. Is it only during fireworks? Is that it? No other time of the year? Oh, randomly. If it's just fireworks at a certain time of the year, drug the dog out of his gourd. Seriously. Make him unconscious. Because it's only a one-time thing. But if it's something that's occurring constantly, and in that case, I'd possibly consider boarding the dog, although I would be very upset with my neighbors. I might try behavior modification on my neighbors. Seriously. I really might. But if it's a one-time occurrence, once a year, just make them go to sleep and forget it. Okay? But if it's something that's happening and you can't control it, then we have to use drug desensitization. And I'll talk about that in a second. Okay, the stimulus does not occur at other times. So you have to be able to... All these things have to occur, or you can't use desensitization. Okay, need a drink of water. So, the first step is you have to determine what bothers the animal. So my spider friends, yes? Thunderstorm phobia almost always needs drug desensitization during the thunderstorm season. So you start them out on medication, and I can't tell you which drugs we use. I mean, I know we've been using a combination of tricyclics and benzodiazepines. Sometimes they use Klonopin. We don't use Valium because it's way too short-acting. Valium won't work. Valium only lasts 2 hours, okay? We need things like Klonopin that can last 8 hours. And then we'll use a tricyclic all during the thunderstorm season. And then on days that you know a storm's coming, we'll tack on a benzodiazepine on top of it. Okay? So it really doesn't make them groggy, but it just makes them go, I don't mind that noise. I used to mind that noise, but now... And then you can use behavior modification. Okay? Thunder, boom, food in your mouth. But see, the problem with thunderstorms are a lot of them. If you go back to this, the problem with thunderstorms are, first of all, do you know what they're reacting to? Some dogs react to the thunder, but some dogs are reacting to the change in whatever is going on in the environment, or it could be the wind. So sometimes you're not sure what they're reacting to. Can you reproduce it on command? If you're God, okay, that's about the only way. Now, if you do get a dog who responds to, if it's just noise and it's just the thunderstorm noise, then you can go get a CD and try it. But it doesn't work in most cases. With fireworks, we've done that. We've gotten a sound CD, and if the dog reacts to it, you can start it at a low level during response substitution. You can actually get them to habituate to it. And then the louder noises, you stuff food in their mouth. You see? So for fireworks, you might be able to try that, but a lot of dogs, again, don't respond to the fireworks. And so then you have to be able to control the intensity. Can't do that with thunderstorms. And the stimulus doesn't occur when you don't want it to. Can't do that with thunderstorms, and that's why drug desensitization is needed, and then you apply the behavior modification once they're under medication. Does that make sense? It's not what you wanted to hear, but it makes sense. Okay, so we had to determine what bothers you. So spider people, I'm assuming, I don't have a spider issue, but I'm assuming that it's the distance, how close the spider is. Does that bother you? That's good. If you know they can't get you, you're okay. Well, that's pretty good. It bothered you? I know, I wondered about that. Did this spider bother anybody else? Looking at it? See? Okay. She's rubbing her hands. Her hands are sweaty. And she doesn't want to look at it. You see this with spider people. They won't look at the screen. It's really. So that's when we need to start. But what happens if I stood here and I started giving you a dollar? And if I saw you start to glance over there, I'd give you a $5. Okay. Whoop. $1,000. Okay. Eventually, you're calm down. It's just a picture. You're getting all nervous. It could be the sound that could be bothering them. The speed and movement, not only distance, but how, okay, if it's out of the box, that really flips you out. And then the characteristics of it, the hairiness of it, the sound it made, or the, you know, just what it looks like. So we're going to prioritize those. So let's just say the distance is the worst. The size might be second, the ugliness of it might be third, and the movement might be fourth. I'm just throwing this out here. But that's exactly what you do in desensitization. You get a list in your head of what you think bothers the animal the most, and you prioritize it. Okay, does this bother you? Spider people? No? Not at all? Okay. So determine what context or interactions the animal can tolerate without stress. My animals can tolerate this. So this is where I'm going to start giving you treats and I'm going to start doing response substitution. Okay, and each characteristic should be increased individually. So I would not want to introduce this and then throw it at them. Okay, seriously, that would be bad. And this is where desensitization always works. Always, if you do it properly. The problem is that people go too fast, including myself. As one characteristic is intensified, another characteristic may need to be temporarily lessened. So I've worked up to carrying this little spider up to them, and they're taking treats just fine. Now I want to add movement. I increase my distance, and I start throwing him in the air. But notice I increased my distance before I added that variable. Those are the things that people mess up on. Stimulus intensity should be increased gradually. Progression to the next level should occur without eliciting undesirable behavior, although sometimes I'll see a little bit of increasing anxiety, and that's okay, but you don't want to push them until they're really afraid. Okay. Clicker training can be very useful in desensitization. Okay, what about this guy? You see how now we've increased him looking a little bit more like a spider? And then we've got movement in this guy. So we would increase the distance before we brought him in. Oh, he's cute. This guy, the kids hid this in my drawer, and it freaked me out a little bit. Yeah. Okay. But you see, he looks more like a spider. So now we would increase the distance and gradually move him closer and before we add another variable. And this, is, of course, is what we're after and our ultimate goal. Now, this one's bad. Does this one bother you guys? This is at my house. Outside of my pool. And you see his little rear end? It's filled with baby spiders. And when you bump it, they go, and that flipped me out a little bit. Yeah. So eventually we're going to work up to that. Some helpful hints. Longer sessions are better. Okay. With training sessions, we tend to go with shorter sessions, but with desensitization, you want to go longer sessions. Smaller the steps, the faster you'll go. I can't emphasize that enough. And this does not have to take a long time. Think about what you're about to do and decrease it 50%. That's my rule. Because I go too fast. And so I try to, okay, what am I about to do? Okay, then let's not put my hand at his elbow. Let's put my hand at his shoulder. This is important. Unemotional behaviors like training, you're going to see improvement, 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 and then they're going to level off. With these, this is really important for you to explain to owners. Because desensitization, you're not going to see a lot of progress. You're not going to see a lot of progress. And then, boom, it's all going to come together. So that's very interesting. It works differently. You see it differently. They don't feel like they're making progress, and then all of a sudden they make a lot of progress. The implications of that are that situations of high fear and anxiety require much greater investment in time. Okay, often a little initial visible results, but then and greater technical expertise are needed to do this because you really have to teach owners. I've got a really good handout. It has to do with spiders. And it has to do with how to add and it's for the clients, and it has to do with how to add things and at what time. Management is critical. Because every time, if they're suddenly exposed to a spider, while you're going through the desensitization process, everything just fell out the window. You're done. It's all over. You got to start all over again. So this is we don't want this. And if you go too fast, this is what you'll end up with, and this is what we want. Right? Yay! That's what we want. Okay, how much time did you say I had? Okay, then let me decide which ones we want to show. Because we're going to run out of time. Okay, we got to show that one. And we got to show... Okay, let's see. We definitely got to show this one. This is to a vacuum cleaner. So this is desensitization. Please go faster. Please go faster. So this is, this dog is really terrified of the vacuum. Actually, we had to first just get her to come into the room with it. So there's treats all over it. We might have had to increase her appetite and get out really good treats to get her to do this. Nothing's moving. It's not on. Now we made the scary monster look different. Now he's got long arms that could grab her, okay? And then we got smart and we got the clicker out. This is an agility clicker trained dog. This was actually my the person who bought my training business, one of my good friends. Anybody know the breed? A what? A Belgian Treviren, one of my very favorite breeds of all time. The best dog I ever owned was a Belgian Treviren. I loved him. Got a lot of behavior problems, though, but I loved him. So now we're doing clicker training, which is actually, we're doing some counter conditioning.
There she jumped a little.
This is a good way to find out how late you are on your click, too, by the way. Videotape yourself. She also, in a second here, is going to do something that I don't recommend. Which is, I think she's doing some targeting there. Get the dog to go around it. Notice that the dog's Bryn's a lot more relaxed, prancing around it a lot more. See that? We saw that little bounce. That means that we're doing okay. We're making progress. This is in real time. It's not edited. Now she has to actually go up and touch the scary monster with her nose. Now, in her case, the noise is the big problem. So we're working on some of the other stuff first, letting her approach it. Now we're making it look different. And then we got smart and we turned it into a piece of agility equipment.
Good girl.
I see. 5 minutes. I know.
Good girl.
Okay, now we've added movement, but she can get away from it, okay? He decreases the movement when she gets closer, which is very good. See how, you see the fear back? See how she's ducking down? So we don't want to go any, we don't want to add anything else until we get her much more relaxed with this situation.
Bryn.
See that, how she jumped? It was going to bite her. Now, that was really good what you did there. This is her husband. He was so good. He let the dog lean down and take it without moving it while she was doing it. That was perfect.
Good girl. Good.
So he made it easier for her.
Good girl.
Now, that time she was actually following it to get the treat. Now, you might have to go with really good treats, something that she doesn't normally get.
Good job.
Not stretching as much. Doing much better.
Good job, excellent.
Ashley's still picking up treats while it was moving right by her face. This dog was absolutely terrified.
Girl.
Now we're picking. Now I don't recommend this.
Good girl.
But Jenna used a laser light to teach the retrieve. I use it for teaching a retrieve, but you can get a lot of psychotic dogs. You can actually get light chasing compulsive behaviors.
Good girl.
So I don't recommend it, but in this case, she's using that because the dog really likes it.
Yeah, that's good.
And got her a lot happier. So again, it was counter conditioning. Then we wanted to see if we could generalize it to the other room, which it did. It generalized very well. Now, this vacuum cleaner is the loudest darn thing I've ever heard. It is in the other end of the house with the door closed. If she would have reacted to it, we would have had to wrap a blanket around it. Okay, because we didn't want her to react. So we've just got her just doing silly things in here. Now we've got it in the room, and we didn't just put it in the room. We moved it down the hallway, and she didn't respond. So then we were able to get it into this room. Now we make a mistake, but we don't know what mistake we're making. Should we get her actually going up to it, and then all of a sudden all progress stopped? We couldn't figure out why. What the heck happened? Well, what we discovered is that there was a little vent on the side of the vacuum cleaner that blew air out at her. So when she went up to get the treat, the scary monster spit at her. Okay? So then we had to back up. We had to go back to where she was comfortable, and then we quickly made progress, but we had to back up. And then we got smart, and we turned it so that it was facing the opposite way so that it wouldn't blow at her in the face, and then we were able to go forward. And so in real time, and this video clip isn't very long, this is what we ended up with. So that is a good example of desensitization. Does she love it? No, but now she can tolerate it. I've got two clips I have to show you. Okay, this is desensitization, again, of Dr. Lusher's dog, who is dog aggressive. This is really important because, and I'm going to demonstrate this while you're seeing it. Now you have the dog with the issue sitting still. Now, the dog that has the issue usually does a sit-stay or a down-stay. In this case, Dr. Lucier has his dog doing a down-stay because I guess he does well with that. Normally, I have the dog not looking at the other dog. Now, the dog that is the target dog starts out weaving back and forth like this. Every time this dog crosses in front of the dog that's got the problem, he gets a click and treat, or he just gets a treat, depending on if we're using clicker training or not. Then this dog backs back up, and now he starts coming in an arc. The dog, the target dog, starts coming, because that's more threatening. Okay? And then you're going to reward, and if any time the dog with the issue gets aggressive, you went too fast, you went too far. If the dog jumps up, she's going to flip off the lights. If the dog jumps up, you tell him, and your dog with the problem starts staring at the other dog, okay, or starts getting anxious, you tell him, sit again. I don't care if his rear end's on the ground or not. Sit means sit there relaxed. So if he's starting to tense up, you tell him, sit, and that tells that person to stop coming so close. Hold on a second, let my dog get under control. Then you have them back off and start again. Okay, and then you work up to walking at an angle past the dog. You can also adjust your speed. Sometimes having the target dog go fast is harder. Sometimes having the target dog go slow is harder. So it just depends on the dog with the problem. And then eventually you teach them to walk straight up. This can be done with people, the dogs that are afraid of strangers or afraid of men. It's the same technique. But this is desensitization because what's scarier? If you had to walk up to the spider or if the spider walked towards you? Right? You'd like to walk up to the spider. That's response substitution. Okay? Desensitization is when they're coming towards you, but you have to do it in a very controlled way. Now, I've got to show you one more video. Okay, this is a combination of everything we've talked about.
Hey, Hero! Look.
This is Hero.
Oh, come back here, buddy. Listen to
Hero. Behind this.
Come on, buddy.
Hero had an ear infection. Can you see how much he hates having his ears cleaned? The good news is that if I wouldn't have done what... He has horrible ears now. And this dog will tolerate me doing anything to his ears.
Come on.
Make that work.
Come on,
this is not edited. This is real time. So I took him to a different room. Okay? Hoping generalization, the lack of generalization would help. He's never had his ears cleaned in this area. I start out using targeting. He's going to touch it with his foot. Okay, and clicker training. He loves clicker training. That's how he's trained to do his service work. Isn't he being funny? Then he said, okay, I can touch it with my foot. It's okay to touch it with my nose. I made a mistake here and touched his sore ear first. I should have touched his unsore ear first. So I'm doing response substitution because I'm doing targeting. I'm doing desensitization because I'm doing it gradually. And I'm using counter conditioning because I'm associating it with food and clicker training.
Getting a TD?
Good boy.
Did he just eat the treats? Yeah. Well, in a little bit he'll eat the treats.
Good boy. Did you get that? Because that was the one I
remember. Now, he's a puppy here. He's only about... He's a big dog. He's like 90 pounds. He's only about 6
running
months old.
Away from the bottle, now. He has to target the bottle.
Hero, because everyone needs
Hero.
Yeah,
and have him go and get me the bottle and bring it to me.
Isn't he beautiful? Great dog. Now, the bad part is putting the liquid in the ear, right? Because you can't control that actual liquid going in. It's sort of like when I desensitize a dog to venipuncture. I can work up to the point of actually putting the needle in. I can pinch them, I can twist them, but when I actually put that needle in, I can't desensitize that actual thing. I've got a video of that, too, by the way, of desensitizing them to having blood taken. Now I'm just putting my finger in and rubbing it. Okay, now I'm wiping it with a dry wipe.
Good
Notice
boy.
How he's standing still and he's waiting for that click.
Good job.
My scale's not up, okay? He's not, like, wanting to do this every second of the day, but he's learning how to do it. Now, here at one point, he thinks he
now,
might want
to
leave.
Now, this is the part, though, that he doesn't like. So this is the one we have to go slower on.
And this is where I'm going to show you where the clicker training can pull him back. Now, I'm adding the part he really doesn't like. So I go back to the point where he was successful and work my way up. Now, right here, Hero goes, I think, in a second here, he's going to do it. I think I'd like to leave. Here, right? Here. I click, and he goes, okay, I'll stay. That's where I'm talking about switching them into a different mood. And honestly, I can now take a bulb syringe and just clean out this dog's ears. I had to do it at home, but I went very fast. Okay, it went very quickly at home, and that's all it took.
Good boy.
And boy, was it worth it.
Jack.
Okay, guys, you get your, 2-minute break.